College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. A lot of talk, and yesterday was 100-day countdown to May 7th, which is the deadline for your real ID. And there are many questions about it, and it has been kicked down the road since COVID because they didn't have the personnel to go through this process. And this is being processed at the state level through the DMV, you know, the where you get your driver's license or take your tests or go and do all the things that you can do there.
Well, I appreciate that we're doing this morning with as few days are left, because the last thing you want to do is be one of the people trying to get a real ID in that last couple of days. It's going to be quite something.
And it's not just for people who want to fly domestically. There are other reasons that you would need a real ID. And joining us from AAA is the Director of Legislative Affairs, Teresa Podjeski. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning.
So people probably, when they find out what you do for a living, they're like, I got to talk to you about something.
Yes.
So talk us through real ID. First of all, before we get into how you get it and what you need to do that, what is going to be the purpose moving forward after May 7th?
Well, the purpose is Congress had passed the Real ID Act back in 2005 to enhance security standards for identification, and that came after the September 11th attacks.
Wait a minute. This was 2005 this was legislated?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so here we are 20 years later.
Right.
Wow.
That's right.
Just to show you the speed and fluidity we work through our government bureaucracy. Okay, so, but this, they're telling us they're serious about this deadline.
That's right. As you said, we are now under 100 days. So May 7th, 2025 is the date that travelers will need to have their real ID if they are boarding a domestic flight. But as you also said, there are other reasons you may want to get a real ID, and that is if you enter a military base or enter a federal facility. And we may not necessarily think that we're going to be entering a military base. I had a brother and a husband who were military, so I went to the boot camp graduation, you know, way back in the day, and that may be a reason that you want to enter a military base. And it's best to check that military base to see what is required when you enter, because you may or may not need that real ID, but it's best to check in advance before you get there.
All right, so let's talk about the practical part of this, and that is if you want to acquire one. First, is there a cost to us to get a real ID?
There is a cost, and there's a fee of $20 to get your real ID, plus the additional fee, which would be your normal fee to renew your driver's license. So that could be like for a four-year renewal license would be $39.50 currently through PennDOT. And so you would add the $20 fee on top of that to get the real ID. Or I'm sorry, it's actually $30, a one-time $30 fee.
Teresa, what all does a person need to bring with them to get that real ID at the DMV? This is no small amount of paperwork here.
No, and that's why you want to do it well in advance, because you want to make sure that you do have the necessary paperwork. So proof of identity, which would be a certified copy of your birth certificate that was filed with the state office of vital records. And if for some reason you do not have that, that can take a couple weeks to get through the state. So then you also need your proof of Social Security, which would be your Social Security card in your current legal name. Or you could use a W-2 or a Social Security form, Social Security 1099. So that would be proof of your Social Security. You need two proofs of current physical Pennsylvania address. So your current unexpired PA driver's license would suffice as one. Your vehicle registration card, a valid auto insurance card, a utility bill, a W-2 would also provide that proof of current physical address. And then you also need proof of all legal name changes, if applicable, all certified marriage certificates for each marriage to track name changes that would have been issued by the county court.
Good Lord.
So there's a lot of paperwork. And as I said, you don't want to wait, to the last minute.
Well, since you're the director of legal affairs for AAA, whatever happened to the Paper Reduction Act? We're trying. Okay, so you got to bring this folder of stuff, and then when you go into DMV, obviously they sort through it, say they've got everything they need, and then how long does it take typically to get the real ID from that point?
Well,
if you've satisfied all the requirements.
Right. If you go on to PennDOT.gov/RealID, there are several locations throughout the state, a number of locations throughout the state, that you can get the RealID on the spot. Or you can go into PennDOT locations and they can verify your paperwork, and then the RealID will be sent to you within a matter of weeks.
Okay. So we're making a note of this. All right, this is great information. So here we go. Real ID is supposed to get real May 7th. And Teresa Pajeski, Director of Legal Affairs for AAA, appreciate your input. Do you have yours?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I've done it quite a while ago.
Paul has his. He's flaunting his little gold.
Oh, yes, but I had to. I had to go back a second time because I wound up, the first time I went to go get it, I wound up in the wrong line. I wound up in a line for a regular license, and I had to come back again.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. All right, Teresa, thank you. Great
You're
information.
Welcome.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
You
thank
got you. It. PennDOT.gov/RealID if you want a list of what you need to take with you.
I had forgotten how much there is.
Oh, yeah. This is a commitment. And keep in mind, this was legislated 20 years ago.
Unbelievable.
718 News Radio KDKA. I'm Larry Richard, and every Tuesday at this time, we bring you another medical professional brought to you by Independence Health System Expert Care here. And today, the director of the Vance Lung Center, Dr. George Dabliakis, is on our video, by the way, and you can see Doctor on the stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
As a specialist in cardiothoracic and vascular surgery, and in particular talking about Advanced Lung Center in the Butler Clarion areas, we have heard recently a real push to get screened, have your lungs screened. And let's start there. Why is it so important to have your lungs screened, even if you aren't currently a smoker?
Well, it is very important because we do screen and check for other cancers to find them early. And this is a screening for lung cancer. And it is actually the most common form of cancer. And people think of breast cancer and colon cancer, and we have good ways to screen for those. But this is actually more common than both of those. So it's very important to get screened and try to find it when it's at early stages, when it could be treated and cured very well.
At what age do you recommend a screening as part of, say, a annual checkup, or how often should you do this?
Well, screening is recommended, and these are pretty strict guidelines because we have a good feel for when patients benefit from screening and when it's unnecessary. So the recommendations are screening at 50 years old, between 50 to 80 years old, actually. And this is really geared towards people that smoke. There are other things that can cause lung cancer, but smoking is by far the most common factor that causes it. Some people have a history of it in their family, other family members with lung cancer, they're a little bit higher risk. There's some environmental factors like radon gas, that type of thing. They all play into it, but by far the most important risk factor is smoking, and that is what the screening is geared towards. So you need to be about 50 years old, and you need to have a smoking history. That means have smoked about 20 years or so, the equivalent of one pack a day for 20 years. And then if you quit, even if you quit within 15 years, you still have a higher risk of lung cancer. So you're still included in the people that should be screened.
Wow, that covers a lot of ground. You mentioned early diagnosis. Are the request now for the lung screenings because the technology is better at this stage to do this?
It has actually been around with good technology to screen for lung cancer for over 10 years now. And this is called a low-dose CT scan. And it's a very simple test. And it's basically a glorified X-ray. There's no IVs involved. You don't have to drink anything. Very little preparation for this. A very quick scan within a couple of minutes. And it's called low-dose CT scan because it's low-dose radiation. The dose of radiation is reduced, but it's still very accurate at picking up lung cancers or tumors, nodules, that type of thing within your lung before they're picked up on regular X-rays or before people even have symptoms. So it's more getting the word out now, and that's what we're trying to do, to make sure all appropriate people think about this.
So if someone is diagnosed through one of these screening processes of having cancer, obviously that is a devastating thing to hear as a patient and family members. But what are treatment options available once a diagnosis is made?
Well, the one promising thing is that screening picks up these lung cancers very early, and they pick them up at a stage when it's highly treatable and potentially curable. They pick them up at stage one, which is a very early time to find it, and generally it's treated with good results at that stage. So that's what we're trying to do. And by the time people have symptoms or feel like they're getting side effects from tumors, cancer, it's usually at the higher stages, stage two, stage three, maybe even stage four. So we don't want to get there, and that's the goal of screening.
So it wouldn't necessarily present if you're at a stage one, but this screening would pick that up. However, what would be some symptoms, doctor, that there is an issue?
The symptoms, the people that are screened will generally have no symptoms, but the symptoms at the later stages are things like some blood when you cough, losing weight, a little more getting out of breath, and much later pain. But we really want to try to pick it up before then, because then there are very good and very successful treatment options to potentially cure this.
And what are some of the enhancements that you've made at the Advanced Lung Center and the Butler Clarion area of Independence Health System?
Well, I think what's really come along in the last few years is we call it multidisciplinary, which means getting other specialists involved. I'm a surgeon, but surgery is one way to treat this. It's not the only way. Sometimes we use a pinpoint radiation treatment, a pinpoint form of radiation. Sometimes it's called chemotherapy, but there are some newer drugs that are not chemotherapy that use your own immunity to fight cancers. And we have a bunch of specialists that review these and decide the best treatment going forward. And then we talk to people about this. So it's more the multidisciplinary approach, we call it.
Dr. George Davliakis, who is the director of Advanced Lung Center and the Independence Health System in the Butler Clarion area, cardiothoracic and vascular surgeon. And doc, we really appreciate your time. Very important information this morning. Thank you.
Well, thank you for helping us get the word out.
You got it. Yeah, a lot of important information. There's a tendency, especially for males, Aaron, to blow off some of this stuff. I know if Marty was here, he'd go, yeah, Larry.
It's true.
Featured with anchorman Paul Rasmussen and waiting a call from Pittsburgh fire chief, Dr. Daryl Jones, who obviously, with the increase in fires that we noticed in the region, wondered what are the major causes locally, because we've seen a number of those, Paul, especially during that real deep freeze.
Yeah, pretty much every year he has to come on the fire safety circuit.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, never overdoing it to make sure that people understand, you know, when you're trying to stay warm in particular. And we've got 6 weeks and 4 days of winter left officially, so it's not going anywhere. Although it's nice to be out of the deep freeze for a change. And we're certainly, I noticed people's attitudes change too. I mean, that was rough, that stretch.
I got out of the car in the parking lot at the grocery store yesterday afternoon, and it was so nice and sunny out. And I had a lighter coat on, and it wasn't enough because of the wind. And I can only imagine what it's going to be like today. So, you know, bundle up. It's still pretty windy.
And speaking of windy, that was one of the major issues with the California LA fire, some of which are still burning. Most of them are contained significantly, and they got some rain. They got some heavy rain that they haven't had in California for a long time, which went a long way to help mitigate it. However, because once the fires moved through areas, there were mudslides because there's just ash. So they ended up having to deal with mudslides in California due to the fires. And we don't know the full devastation yet in that area. It seems hard to imagine because it's been weeks now that there have been fires burning there. And a year ago in Hawaii, that was unimaginable as well. And then you had the contrast of the fires in California with the polar vortex that went all the way down and produced snow, as we talked about in New Orleans, of 10 inches last week.
Unprecedented.
And the first time they ever had a blizzard warning. We haven't had a blizzard warning here this year, or I think last year, or the year before. So for people in the South, and you saw Panama Beach, Florida, beaches covered with snow right up to the ocean, you know, the Gulf. So anyway, I guess we'll try to check in with the fire chief.
Well, something must have come up because he's very prompt.
Yeah, if he's
very
busy,
punctual. Yeah,
we certainly understand. There is a major story because we have talked almost every day in some way, shape, or form about artificial intelligence.
And we were discussing yesterday, you know, its impact on the supply chain with a professor who specializes in that from Duquesne University. But then after we were done with the interview and I were going back and forth, and I said, you know, one thing that is going on with artificial intelligence, it seems to me at least, is that there seems to be a bubble of speculation that's going to burst of some kind. Well, it happened yesterday. I don't pretend to know anything.
No, you were right on the money. So here's CBS's Michael George.
Tech stocks took a big hit yesterday due to a Chinese-owned startup called DeepSeek and its new AI chatbot. The company has created an artificial intelligence model in much less time and for much less money than U.S. companies. Its AI assistant was Apple's most downloaded free app yesterday. Tech darling NVIDIA, which makes chips that power AI, lost nearly $600 billion in market value. That's the biggest one-day loss by a company ever.
I actually think there's a good reality check, because if anyone could come near what DeepSeek's done in terms of the just cheaper, basically, training models, that's going to increase AI use cases. It's going to increase computing power. And that's actually a positive for U.S. techs.
And President Trump called DeepSeek's breakthrough a wake-up call for American companies to be laser-focused on competing to win.
So how about that? The biggest loss of a company, one-day loss in the history.
And NVIDIA's chips are very expensive. And now we have this alternative that's much less expensive. And so somebody came up with a better mousetrap, and look what happened.
Boy, you were right on the money yesterday, because you sense there's some type of bubble here.
We've seen this happen in tech before, where someone has a product that everyone's gangbusters about, and the price of it gets way overblown, and then there's a correction.
Well, that's a major correction.
Wow. I'll say.
$300 billion? That's more money, except for Elon Musk, who has $439 billion and is the richest man on the planet. The next richest is Jeff Bezos, is $240. So you're talking about $300 billion is...
It's more than Jeff, right?
Right.
Yeah.
In
wow.
one day.
Yikes.
How does that happen? That's why they have all these experts, all these things that are involved in the financial world and Wall Street and stocks and all these different things, nobody's 100% certain on any of it.
Absolutely. You know, Larry, when you put it all together, when you look at the market upheaval yesterday and you look at the change that's taking place in Washington in terms of policy, this temporary pause on federal spending for like grants and so forth and foreign assistance, that temporary pause is going to have a ripple effect. We have the immigrations and custom enforcement raids that are going on. They're going after people with criminal records. In fact, I'll be talking at 8 o'clock about a release of a prisoner to ICE custody here in Western Pennsylvania that happened just last week. All of these things are taking place at the same time.
Yeah, it's simultaneous.
Plus the weather, right?
So I just got it.
It's been a lot.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a lot for the past year plus now. For a lot of people, for a lot of different reasons. But right now, this federal aid pause it can really hurt and put people out of work, unpaid, if they don't figure out exactly how long this pause is going to be. For instance, schools that get federal aid, what happens there? Do they lay off teachers? Do they lay off administrators? So this pause has a lot of people pausing to wonder, what about me in my, in my role, whatever that is. But in a school setup, I'm not sure why there would be a pause for aid for schools. Yeah. We'll continue to follow the story
this
here.
This, by the way, takes effect at 5 p.m. today.
Today.
Yeah.
So what will that mean? It has, big implications for what happens with people's livelihood.
Let's hope that they have people looking at a long list of things and green lighting the stuff that they're pretty sure about, fits their agenda. I can see them going after, what they're talking about in the release, and we'll repeat this at 8. Things like the Green New Deal, for example, would be things that they want to cut off money to.
We'll keep you posted. Coming up right after the top of the hour, news with Paul Rasmussen. We're going to check in with this new development from a new suitor for trying to make a deal for U.S. Steel. So we've long heard Nippon Steel trying to merge with U.S. Steel. That's getting pushed back, did from Joe Biden, did from Donald Trump. It's kind of in limbo at the moment because there are two court cases, one filed by Nippon, one by U.S. Steel.
And now we have Encore Holdings. It's a minority investor in U.S. Steel that's trying to do something completely different, which is oust the company's chief executive and then pull back on the legal action that the U.S. Steel has been taking to try and push this deal through, and then oversee somehow a change on the board of directors and a deal with an American steelmaker of some kind.
Including booting the CEO.
Right.
That's part of their plan. So
that's a proxy fight, and who knows what's going to happen with that. But
all right, we have reached out to Pittsburgh Fire Chief Dr. Daryl Jones on the Big K Morning Show. Chief, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
One of the things we wanted to reach out to you about is during this extreme cold that we had for the last 2 weeks, obviously mitigated somewhat now, but we notice an increase in fires. What are the causes of these fires that you know of?
Actually, I don't know of the causes. I believe all of them so far are still under investigation. At least the ones in the city are. The ones outside, I wouldn't have that information. The county fire marshal might be able to help you out with that.
Suffice to say that we may anecdotally relate it to people trying to stay warm when we're dealing with extreme cold. So it gives you an opportunity to reiterate your safety tips for people trying to do just that.
Yes. So if we make that assumption that the cold weather is what triggered this action, then we need to, again, reinforce the use of space heaters and how not to use other appliances as alternative heating devices like your stove or your oven.
Dr. Jones, the last time we talked about this topic, you had something very interesting to say that I had not heard before about the use of extension cords and getting the right ones when you go to a hardware store. Can you repeat that for us this morning?
Sure. So space heaters and all electrical items, when you plug them in, they use a certain amount of electricity or amperage. And using an extension cord, if the extension cord is not rated to handle the amperage that the appliance use, then the extension cord can overheat, and that can be a cause of your fire. So you need to either plug the appliance directly into the wall or have an extension cord that's rated for that type of amperage. Now, you go to a hardware store, and it should have a UL tag on it telling you what the rating is. And if the ratings don't match, or if one the extension cord does not exceed the ratings of the appliance, then you should not use that extension cord. People also use power strips, and the same thing applies for the power strip. However, some power strips do have a circuit breaker in them, which will starts to draw too much energy, it trip the circuit breaker and shut the device off. But I would definitely just try to, the safest option is just plug it right into the wall.
And that said, some other notes, I mean, smoke alarms, obviously, we've learned over the years how important they are for people to have them, maintain them, make sure that they're operational. But we've heard a lot more about carbon monoxide detectors more recently, and they're relatively inexpensive to have, but important, right?
Yes, they are. And so you should have at least one on every level. Don't put it in the furnace room or near your hot water tank, maybe about 20 feet from those appliances, especially if you have a gas heat and gas hot water, because everything that fossil fuel that burns is going to give off some amount of carbon monoxide. So you wanted to keep it away from there to keep from getting false alerts. So other than that, have one, at least one on every level of your home.
Appreciate you checking in with us, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here, guys.
You got it. Pittsburgh Fire Chief Dr. Daryl Jones, and really important information, Paul.
You know, the last time we talked, Dr. Jones mentioned, he said, be wary of these cheap, you know, extension cords that you can buy and these cheap power strips, because they can be a fire hazard.